The last thing most of us would want to do would be to upend the world of a child, any child. But when that child's world is already in disarray and there's neglect or abuse, that's when the state steps in and puts the child into foster care. Oregon observes Foster Care Month in May, putting some attention onto the foster care system, the people who make it work, and the people who could make a contribution to helping those children in need. Two guests join us from the Department of Human Services Child Welfare Division. April Flint Gerner is the Deputy Director of Equity, Training, and Workforce. Welcome, April.
Good morning.
Kimberly Whitney is with us as well, the District Manager for Jackson and Josephine Counties. Kim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kim, I was a foster parent myself for nearly 10 years, so I do come with some knowledge of my own here. I do remember a mismatch between the need out there and the supply of parents. What has it been like in recent years in your district?
Well, I think that continues to be an area we're always looking to improve on, is developing resources that can really align to meet the needs of the kids in care, both culturally and recognizing the unique characteristics our children present, and also how important it is to do a good match.
How much can you take the time to make a good match, though, if you're kind of in triage and you need a space for a kid and you need it now?
You know, that is a great question. That is part of what we're working diligently to change. I would say right now that continues to be an area that we have to spend a lot of time and focus on, and it certainly is not where we would like it to be. Oftentimes, the need for a resource family or parent, resource parent, is immediate, and taking the time to do that match is not so easy. But we do have a shared vision for that changing, and us to have far more of a resource pool, if you will, of people who identify what makes sense for them and what kids they can best support.
How big a pool would you like to see? Would you basically like to double it?
If I had my choice, absolutely. I would love to double it or even more. I think the better job that we can do to understand who our youth are and know who our resource families are and do those matches, the more likelihood the success for our youth in care.
April Flint Gerner, what are the typical obstacles? What are the reasons that people do not consider becoming foster parents, or is there much research on that?
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of people have some misnomers about what it means to provide care for, you know, a child that they don't know, right? And so, you know, all children deserve love and to feel like they belong and to feel connected to their communities. And I think where we have opportunities to change some of that narrative, to really educate people about, you know, what are young people who are vulnerable really experiencing and how we as a community can show up and support them. And, you know, we really have to take that time, as Kim was talking about, to really find those resources that are going to be good matches for the young people that we have. But I really believe that people have a lot of misnomers about what they're going to experience as resource parents.
I think you touched on it there, the idea that, you know, people who know the children. I mean, how much capacity is there in the system, given certification and all, for, you know, the family who knows a child to say, hey, we can take them in?
It really is the best case scenario. We, you know, in Foster Care Month, we recognize that resource parents who may not know children are absolutely a valued partner with us. But when children can remain connected to their families, be it grandparents or aunts and uncles or cousins or even siblings, they just experience so much less trauma. When children know that they belong and that they're already loved, you know, we really want to highlight this month the importance of kin and relatives in caregiving of children. And we really want to prioritize that. And I think most of our children actually in care are really served by their families. And so we want to continue to support those families, you know, remaining intact when possible.
And how often is it a case where you can find family members or at least people who already know the children, Kim, to step up?
Well, I would say specifically in Jackson and Josephine counties, we spend tremendous efforts doing that. In fact, the majority of our resource families fall in the relative or kin types of families. And the moment we know there's a likelihood that we're going to have a youth in care, we now engage in doing immediate searches to identify what family is available, what are those connections the youth may already have to their community, and reaching out to those individuals to see if they're interested in being a resource.
Wow, that's a real dive into a network all at once, isn't it? I mean, if the family hasn't been on the radar prior to this, that you really don't have no knowledge of what the connections are to other people that they know, people who could help.
That's absolutely true. And I would also just acknowledge how many people, in spite of that, choose to engage with our organization and meet the needs of individuals that they love, who they may not have had a relationship, but they have a desire to have a relationship, and the outcomes when that happens are very positive.
We are talking about foster care in Oregon, and foster care, children in foster care, in other words, with Kim Whitney, the district manager for Jackson and Josephine counties. April Flint Gerner is a deputy director of equity, training, and workforce for the Child Welfare Division, Department of Human Services. You can join us. Your questions, your comments, your experiences to share about foster care, if you have some, welcome to join us on the exchange by phone, 800-838-3760. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. April Flint Gerner, the term resource families has been used already. Why the change and not just call them foster parents? What does that represent?
That is such a great question. Really, we want to support the whole needs of a child, which means that the families that we're asking to step in to support these children, we really want them to be a resource for the whole family, the community. When we separate children from their families, it's very traumatizing. And so we want to make sure that we are, you know, at every possible juncture, we're making sure that those families stay connected to their children, that the children stay connected to their community. And if they have to be removed, that we are connecting them with folks who are going to help be committed to getting them back home, back to their communities, back to their families, back to their kith and kin. And so really that change is really to say, you know, we want you to help be a resource to children in need, as opposed to we want to really continue to reinforce the separation of children into stranger foster care.
Along those lines, and I'm aware of programs that have been tried here and there of attempting either to keep the children with their parents with foster parent support, or put them with foster parents but allow the birth parents to be there and provide some kind of moral support and to have some sort of general picture of all the adults who care about this child present. Are those trials ongoing or are they working out?
They do. I mean, it is ideal practice for children to remain in close contact with their families. And the rates of reunification and getting kids back home to their community only increase with that steady contact and visitation. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're trying to really reinforce is, what does it do to a child when they're not able to remain connected to their families? And so the more that they can see them, the more that they can visit, the increase of reunification just, you know, is there. And so those trial visits and those, you know, increasing contact are something that we always try to practice.
Let's talk some numbers here. As of May 1st, 5,245 children in foster care. I think I saw that the number of resource families is 3,000-something, so obviously a bit of a difference there. And then what's the usual length of stay in foster care, April?
You know, we are charged to keep that number really low. We want to try to see that children who come into care, you know, that they are back home within 6 to 12 months, and that really is our mandate. We have a responsibility to make sure that we're working to minimize the trauma of separation. And so we really want to make sure that even if we have to go over that kind of 6 to 12 month period of time, that we are making diligent effort to get those kids back home.
We have an email here from John and Eugene who writes, I'm a CASA in Lane County, and I've had very good experiences with small group homes for young adults. Unfortunately, many people dismiss this option as institutionalization, and he puts that in quotes. Is anything being done to learn from and replicate the best small group homes? That, again, from John and Eugene. Kim, is there anything like that in your district?
No, we don't have anything like that in our district specific to what he's referring to. And, you know, as far as the work that's being done statewide with that, April may be able to better respond.
Okay.
You know, not that I know of. I think that what we're really trying to do is make sure that we're exploring options that are going to be a best for children. And what we've seen in some other states and jurisdictions who have used group home care is that the children don't often get that individualized family-like support. And so I do think it's really interesting to think about small settings where it is a family-like setting, and we do have some opportunities to continue to think about that. The traditional kind of adult group home care historically hasn't worked out for children, according to research and just, you know, what is common knowledge across child welfare. But I do think that we have to continue to think about all the ways that we can serve as a resource to children, including that small family setting that where children tend to do really well.
And Kim, I went over the numbers for the state, 5,245 children in foster care as of May 1st. What's your usual population for Jackson and Josephine counties?
Currently, right now, as of May 1st, we have 355 children in care in Jackson County, and we have 149 in Josephine County.
Okay. And then about 500 something roughly for the two counties. And what's the number of resource families?
You know, I'd have to look. I didn't pull that number exactly up for our counties. What I do know is specific to our children that are in kith or kin homes with relatives, that we have 167 of our children in Jackson County residing with family or kin, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is it a bit of a struggle? I mean, and let me even throw the pandemic in here. I didn't think about this before, but how much did the pandemic complicate the job of providing foster care and getting people into the system, Kim?
Well, that is a great question. That's part of the reason when you asked me about the number of families that I hesitate to answer, in that we've had many families who have chosen during the pandemic, while they've stayed certified, they've chosen to not have children in their homes at this point in time because of the impact of the pandemic, both personally, as people were navigating the stress related to being the last 2 years, they realized they had to focus on caring for themselves and couldn't really focus on caring for our youth in care.
Wow. So the need is even greater than before.
Yes, it is.
And how about the demand? I know there've been certain spikes. I know we got into foster parenting when there was a meth epidemic and the need for placements just took off, like doubled in a month in Jackson County. Has it been sort of up and down like that in years since too?
You know, I think we have seen ebbs and flows. What I would say is we've also seen family members really connect and be a resource and be available when they have a member of their family become engaged with our child welfare system and become a resource. And so while the need has had ebbs and flows of children coming into care and needing services, I've also seen a tremendous response from our community to meet that need.
We're talking about foster care and Foster Care Month with Kim Whitney and April Flint Gerner of the Department of Human Services for the state of Oregon. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Over time, April, are there any, I mean, there have been some issues, obviously, with foster care in Oregon, out-of-state care, kids being held in hotels, things like that. Any adjustments to triggers for putting kids in foster care in the first place or a wholesale rethinking of the system?
Oh, absolutely. I love this question. So just before the pandemic, we and the executive leadership team and our partners have really started to dig in to create a vision for transformation for child welfare, really focusing on prevention and preservation. You know, at the end of the day, we know that the experience of foster care is very traumatizing for children. And so how can we get families what they need before they need to come to our attention? We've also been working on our infrastructure and focusing on making sure that there are no barriers to positive outcomes for all of the children that we serve. We also have been looking at better ways to use our data to make decisions. And so we have seen some dramatic improvements. I mean, we've continued to reduce the number of children in foster care. We're continuing to, I mean, our workforce has been relatively steady throughout this pandemic, which is absolutely, hats off to our workforce and our partners that are out there serving children and families during, you know, one of the hardest times we've seen in any of our lifetimes. And then we've got some kind of technological advances and other practice supports and things that we've been putting in place. And we are, you know, steadily making progress toward that vision for transformation. We really want to make sure that the community is sharing power with us, that we have the resources that we all need to help children thrive and grow. And quite frankly, sometimes that means that they need to be with grandparents and sisters and brothers and uncles while they're receiving care. And parents are getting what they need. It isn't always about coming into stranger foster care. And so really working on that prevention and preservation. We've just launched preservation sites, family preservation sites, across our state. And we're trying to do more to serve families in home, in addition to growing out our pool of resource families, grandparents, et cetera, to help serve our families. We've got to be able to help them navigate tough times while they remain intact as a family.
Let me take a call here. I don't know the name here, and I don't see a town, but go ahead. You're on the Jefferson Exchange with April Flint Gerner and Kim Whitney. Are you there? Guess not. Okay. Let us. The question I would have then, April, based on what you were just saying, is how proactive DHS can be. I mean, how much information can you put into the hands of families about how to be good parents, how to deal with the bumps that life gives without having the family come apart? I mean, DHS is in a situation where you're generally there after something has happened.
Oh, that's such a good point. You know, I think part of it is really about, you know, communities have long known how to take care of their children, and they have the wisdom, the cultural wisdom, the history. You know, that's why we, you know, this month being focused on grandparents and kith and kin, you know, I think about my own grandmother. If something were to have happened to me and my parents when I was growing up, my grandmother would have been the best person to come and say, you know, this is what needs to happen, and this is how to prevent things from happening again. And I think developing those strong connections with our community, we as an agency have to let down some of our institutional barriers and listen to the communities who know these children best. And how can we help get those services and support upstream to families who are at risk rather than a hotline call needing to be made and a risk of foster care. And so it really is about us growing out, you know, like these opportunities to meet with our community, listen to our community, partner with our community, and find ways to get that resource into the hands of families. The best intervention is child welfare. The best intervention is good parenting. And so if we can support good parenting before that call, that's ideal for everyone.
And then, Kim Whitney, in terms of recruitment, I've been involved in some recruitment efforts for DHS, for foster parents over the years when I was a foster parent myself, and it's hard to get people to step up for this. Are you changing pitches in any way?
We are. We are working to do some more intentional efforts to do outreach to a wide array of communities. And obviously part of those include our Latinx communities and our people of color, and recognize the need for children in care who don't look like much of what our community looks like, to have those families that look like them, to provide those supports to them, to honor their culture and who they are as individuals. With that, I would also say we're broadening our aspect, and many people, it doesn't have to start off with being a resource parent. There's lots of other ways to get involved. We have Every Child locally, where people who are interested but not sure can still get engaged or involved with us. And we actually see people get involved with us who are considering being resource parents or foster parents, who come and volunteer, and they work as drivers and help drive some of our youth to and from and take the burden off of people who are current resource parents, where transportation may be an issue for them. So there's a lot of different ways for people to get involved and consider thinking about whether they want to be a resource parent rather than it just being all or nothing.
And just by the numbers, April Flint Gerner, it seems like you want to basically double the number of foster parents in the state of Oregon. I know I asked the same question of Kim, but you really want thousands more people to get involved.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the more resources that we have, and I think Kim spoke to this well, it's not just about being a resource for children to live with them and provide care. There's so many ways to get involved and be resources for parents. And I think to her point around making sure that we have representation that, you know, can meet the needs of the children that we have. And really, sometimes you're talking about young people who have complex needs. They have, you know, physical needs and medical needs and those kinds of things that we really need lots of different folks. And I think about, you know, some of our folks who've worked in the medical field and our folks who've been teachers and all of these folks who have specialized training and skill and patience and love for children. We really, really need them to be a resource for children, whether that's mentoring or being a court-appointed special advocate, or to Kim's point, just to spend time with them and, you know, drive them around, be a tutor. There's so many different ways to get involved, and we really need a whole community response to children who have been maltreated and who are vulnerable.
Let me see if our caller is there again. I'm going to try this one more time. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. You there?
Yes.
Okay. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am a former foster parent, 24 foster kids over 7 years. I have 2 adopted children through foster care. And 2 years ago, my oldest started having some very intense mental health issues in and out of hospitals, et cetera. So disruptive to my home that I finally had to reach out to DHS and do a volunteer case. And I'm on the other side of the coin now. And I have to say, I struggle with Oregon and the system that Oregon has. I had a volunteer case for a significant amount of time, but volunteer placements ran out. And so the state had to take over and bring a case against me just to be able to house my son. So I caution some people when they are trying to engage with the state, because sometimes it backfires when you're trying to do the best for your child.
All right. Thanks. So
I just wanted to make that mention.
Okay. Particularly to kill children who are adopted out of foster care, what supports does the state provide, April?
There are a ton of supports, and we've got, there are private and public dollars. There are national organizations that provide a lot of support. We've got all kinds of navigator programs and things that help to provide legal representation and peer support. There are so many national and local organizations who are charged to support adoptive families, maintaining those connections, healthy attachment, and continuing to be strong and stable. And we know that sometimes it's hard, and that, you know, navigating the system, particularly when you've got children that are struggling with trauma and struggling with, you know, some of their family history and things. And so it's really important that we maintain that connection, that there's post-adopt workers and those kinds of things that really help to stay connected to families to make sure they're getting some of the supports and services that they need.
All right. Foster Care Month 2022 observed in the state of Oregon at the Department of Human Services. Kim Whitney, District Manager for Jackson and Josephine Counties. April Flint-Gurner, Deputy Director, Equity, Training, and Workforce. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.